Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with Kia. Peace of mind comes as standard with a Kia 7-year warranty.
1850 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. And it's Joe at RT.ie from anywhere in the world. These first two stories speak for themselves, but they also remind us why it's so important that we don't let the campaign against this virus slip, which, according to reports we were getting this morning, did in a number of places over the weekend with street parties and house parties, and people not maintaining social distance. James Norton. James, good afternoon.
Hi, Joe. How are you?
Good, thanks. And condolences, first of all, on the death of your mother. You want to tell the story, and it's a reminder how awful this pestilence is, and a warning to people as well to please maintain the government guidelines at the moment. Tell us about your mother.
Well, Joe, my mother was born in 1938 to a family of nine, and they lived at Ballymount Hardware in Walkinstown.
Mm-hmm.
And in later life, she met a local lad, a farmer, Eddie Norton, and they married and had kids. I was born in 61, and we lived in Newcastle for a while, but she settled in Lucan.
Right.
And had a hardware shop in Leixlip. And in her latter years, sadly, she got dementia.
Mm.
And we had to put her into the Rye Vale Nursing Home in Leixlip, where I have to say, she got the very best of care.
Okay.
Absolutely wonderful care. But on the morning of the 29th of April, they rang me around 10 o'clock, and I knew instinctively that this wasn't going to be good news.
Mm-hmm.
But the previous evening, though, I had checked with the staff, and all her vital signs were perfect,
okay. And
it looked very promising. And they were looking forward to moving her back into her original room in the nursing home, because she had tested positive for COVID about 9 days earlier. And as I said here, I want to pay tribute to the Rye Vale Nursing Home team, from the cleaners to the carers to the nurses to the administration, the management. They couldn't have done enough for my mother. And for the 3 years she was there, she was a part of their family. And they showed her real Christian love. They were fantastic to her.
Okay.
But anyway, they rang me and I had to get there as quickly as possible, which I did. And on entering the nursing home, lucky enough, I had surgical gloves and a mask, because my own partner, Margaret, is a carer in a nursing home in Navan, and I was half kitted out. But when I got to the nursing home, I had to be kitted out in the full surgical gown, surgical gloves, covered from head to toe, equipped with a mask and a face shield. To all intents and purposes, I looked like a spaceman from a 1970s Star Trek movie.
Yeah.
And I often, it grieves me to this day, how my poor mother, with dementia, coped with that. I mean, for her, in her dying hours, to be looking up at her son, her eldest son, covered with a mask and a face shield, and unable to hold her hand or hug her or kiss her. And all I could do for her was sit by her bed and tap her hand over the blanket and pray. That's as much as I could do for my mother. And that was absolutely traumatic. And I think that experience will stay with me for a long, long time. Because as you know, Joe, in Ireland, one of the things we do very well is funerals.
Yeah.
And we hug and kiss and recite good stories and we make the best of a funeral. We hadn't any of that. When it came to the days when my mother had to be buried, and I have two wonderful sisters, Maura and Breda, they did all the heavy lifting. They did fantastic work for their mother, both while she was in the nursing home and at the time of her death, and indeed for my father before that. And it must be very hard on my two sisters and my brother John, who's in Florida, because they weren't there. I at least have the privilege of being with my mother as she bred her, as she had her final breaths, and I was there to see her out and to give her whatever comfort I could. But it certainly does grieve me that she had to die in in such a way. And the funeral, in fairness to Lucan Parish and Father Curran there, we at least, there's a lot of positives here, we at least got a church funeral. I'm so grateful to Father Curran and Lucan Parish for that. We had a beautiful singer, we had the organ, we had 8 people in the church, and many neighbours and friends stood outside the church and in the car park, the far side of the road. But there was a complete, as you understand, a complete lack of hugs, handshakes, and the usual embraces that comfort us at funeral times. Indeed, even in my own case, where my partner is a carer, I haven't been near her or got a hug or a kiss from her in the last, since the funeral, obviously, since I was with my mother, because I was with a COVID patient and my partner working in the industry has to be very careful and keep away from me.
And it's not just it's not just the death of your mother, but it's those final hours of the as you say, what you see, you're dressed like something spaceman from Star Trek. That's what your mother is looking at. And
well, that is true, Joe. Yeah. Nothing can prepare you for the loss of your mother, but nothing can prepare you for the sight of seeing your mother struggling for breath. And never in your wildest dreams could you have imagined yourself by your dying mother's bedside, unable to hold or kiss her in her hour of distress. Never in your wildest dreams could you expect to be grieving the loss of your mother alone, without the support of your siblings, your partner, your children, your friends, your aunts, uncles, etc.
Okay. Say with us, James. We're talking about Maura Norton. May she rest in peace. Betty, good afternoon. Betty Catul, you were talking about your husband, Paddy.
Yes.
And when did Paddy die?
Paddy was in a nursing home, in Clonsky nursing home, for the last 18 months.
Okay.
I must say, like the other poor gentleman, they were very good to him, very kind to him. And he didn't have dementia. He had the loss of his legs, the use of his legs.
Okay.
Now, I'm elderly, and I had a very ill son at home here with COPD on oxygen. And we both ended up in hospital trying to lift him one night. And my own GP said, I cannot go on. So kindly got him in to Clonsky, where they were very good to him, and he was quite contented, but always wanted to come home. Kept saying, how long am I here for? And I kept telling him, soon. I have chronic arthritis, and I had gone down with the second hip very bad. And I was waiting, as you know, I was on an urgent list for the surgery, and I was waiting 12 months. But anyhow, just before the lockdown came, I went in this particular Saturday, and I tried to explain to him. Now, he could understand what you were saying, you know. He was quite with it.
Okay.
And like the grandchildren used to come in and he'd play five with them, and they tried to get into bed with him and rob his biscuits. But anyhow, I explained to him. I said, Paddy, I might be coming to see you for a while. I have to go into hospital to have another new hip. And he said, that's okay. And I said, you'll be all right. And he said, look, I understand. But can I say something, Betty? When you come home, can I come home? I'm fed up being in here. And my heart used to break when he'd ask me. So I said, we'll see what happens. Sorry, Joe.
Yeah, take your time, Betty.
We'll see what happens when I come home, love. So I went into Kappa Hospital. I was 3 days in intensive care. Quite a big surgery. Mm-hmm. Had to lengthen my leg. Came home. I didn't come home. Went into Clontarf because I needed, physiotherapy much. And the poor lady in our ward went down with the virus. So we were all encouraged to stay in our room, and God love them, they did their best to get us home. And I came home on the 1st of April. On the 2nd of April, I rang my GP, and he said, I think you should be tested, Betty, under the circumstances. So I went. I got a phone call Friday night from the HSE to go down to Clonsky, 9 o'clock next morning. My daughter-in-law, who was also with the carer, brought me down, had the car all insulated, nobody would hardly see me. Brought me down, I got tested, and I came home, and I was told to stay away from the family. And on the Tuesday evening, I got a call from my GP to know, did I get a call from the HSE? I said, no, I didn't. Well, he said, you're clear. Oh, I said, thank God.
Right.
Now, he said, I'm going to give you a word of advice, Betty. He said, you've just had major surgery, you're very low. Please stay in, do what they ask you to do. Oh, God, I said, I will. So I said, certainly. But I get a call on the Thursday that my husband had the COPD. the virus.
COVID, yeah.
So I explained to them that I was only at a hospital and that, and they said, well, if you'd like to come in now, you take your own risk.
Yeah.
We'll give you the mask. And I said, how is he? Well, she said he had his breakfast this morning and he's cheerful enough, but at lunchtime he got very drowsy. So, he had a turn before and this happened, but he came out of it. So I said to her, you know, can I think about it? So I rang my friend, Medic McMahon, and he said to me, no, Betty, I don't think you should go in. No, I said, you could bring it out for yourself, you could bring it out for your family. It's that dangerous. So I said, okay. So I rang them back. They were quite nice. They understood. So the next day was Good Friday. And you won't believe this, Joe. My son died last Good Friday here in the house in front of me. I was on my own. He died trying to get his breath. They were very good in James's Hospital. They came. Two ambulances worked on him, but he passed on. He was only 58. But anyhow, I get a call. The next morning, I came down, it was Good Friday, and I said, I'm going to be in the nursing home. So I rang the nursing home. I said who I was and could I house Paddy, and she put the phone down. I said, that's unusual. So then I said, I rang again, couldn't get through. So came into a drawer here that Tony, my son, had the numbers down for emergency numbers, the lady in charge of the nursing home. Got through to her, and she said, did your daughter not ring you, Betty, this morning at 1:30? And I said, I haven't got a daughter, Pauline. Oh, my daughter-in-law, I said. And no. Well, she said, Paddy passed away last night.
Oh, God.
Oh, Joe, my heart. And with that, my hall door opened, and it was my son and Pauline.
Yeah.
And she came in, oh, my God, she said, you know. I said, I do know. And I said, I wasn't with him. And we always made a promise we'd be together.
Mm-hmm.
And my husband was a very good man, and he was sacristan to the church for 10 years. And one night we sat down and we wrote out what hymns we'd like, what readings we'd like out of Scripture. We wrote them down. And I promised him I'd do that, and he'd do it for me. But apart from that, anyway, I said, how can I see him? Well, my daughter-in-law said, no, Betty, you'll never be able to see him.
Yeah.
Well, I said, I must see him. I must see him. She said, no, you can't. So they said, look, you do nothing. Myself, Alan and Paul and Killette, we'll organise for you. We'll do everything. You just look after yourself. So very kindly, the undertakers, my governors, were very kind on the Saturday. They rang my daughter-in-law, and she was saying that I was so distraught. I hadn't seen him or been with him. Would she like to come in and see the coffin? We have him in the coffin. No, she hasn't to worry about anything. He's been embalmed.
Okay.
So she rang me. Well, I said, I'd love to go in. No, she said, you have to go into the room on your own. We don't stand back here.
Yeah.
So I went in on my own, and I looked at the coffin, and I couldn't visualize him in there. And I just wanted to put my arms around and kiss him, you know, and tell him how sorry I was that I wasn't there. Sorry, Joe. But then we had the funeral on the Tuesday, and I rang our parish priest, very nice. He said, I can't come to the house, but I said, I know that, Father. He said, look, I'll come to the graveside and say a few short prayers. Would that be okay? I said, that's fine. I came along on Tuesday. The undertaker said they would call to the house here for us, and they would collect us and bring us. And I must say thank you to all my neighbours here in Meadow Grove and Dundrum. They all came outside our houses and saluted us as we passed by.
Lovely.
Very nice of them. Paddy would have been proud. And we went to the graveside, and my son said, you can't come over and stand aside with us, Mum, you've got to stay here. So one of the gravediggers seen me on my two sticks. I could barely stand with the pain in my hip. So he said, hold on to that headstone there, he said, and you can see what's going on. Oh, my husband was just brought in and put down immediately, and the boards over, and it was all just done so quickly.
Yeah.
And I looked over at my family, and I stood there, and I couldn't believe it, Joe. It's the most saddest funeral to see your loved one going down to the ground, and you can't even be there. Or even when he died, I wasn't with him. And I can't get closure on it.
Yeah.
I feel so sorry for anyone that can't be with them. It's terrible.
And how long were you married, Betty?
We were married in 1958.
Wow.
Yeah, a lovely man.
62
Very kind,
years.
Good father. Was in charge of the scouts here in Dundrum. Loved the lads. Yeah. And I remember one day, there was a father's weekend, and the little boy came up to my husband and said, I can't go to the father's weekend. And my husband said, why can't you come? I've no daddy. And my husband put his arm around him. He said, I'm your daddy. You're coming to that weekend.
Yeah.
That's how kind he was, Joe.
And was there a prospect, now it's up to COVID-19, afflicting Paddy, was there a prospect he could come home, Betty?
No, because of his legs. Okay. Because he couldn't come home, Joe, because he couldn't.
But you
stand.
Could, you could have had your, you'd have your chats and everything every day when you go up to, you would go up to see him.
Oh, I'd go to see him a couple of times. Yeah. Because I'd go by taxi, and my granddaughter and my family. Now I must say, my son Alan and Paul are very good, and my other grandchildren, they would come up. The only ones that wouldn't come that often would be Paul and Colette down in Westford because they were both working. Yeah. And they did come to see him now, you know. But he had this dream that he would be coming home because I never told him he wouldn't be coming home.
Yeah,
I couldn't do that to the man.
Oh, Betty, you can't do not be hard on yourself.
No,
please,
it's just
God.
Very hard, Joe.
I know it is, I know it
is. And when I hear, do you know what really annoys me? There was a party going on around the corner last week, a children's party. They were out in the street, the parents or whatever, adults, hugging one another with drink. My friend rang me, he came up, he was after me down the chemist to get masks. And he rang me and he said, you know what I'm after seeing down the road, Betty?
Yeah,
oh, I said, that's dreadful. I said, but did you ring the guards? No, no, he said, I wouldn't do that. Well, I said, I think that's just desperate. What is wrong with people that they don't realise the seriousness of this show? Now, I'm supposed to go out today. I'm afraid to go out. I really am.
Betty, stay with us for a sec because I want you to listen to Valerie, Sweeney.
Thank you, Joe, for listening to me.
And thank you for sharing, and James also. And your mother, James, and Paddy, in your case, Betty, we're blessed to have the two of you in their lives and vice versa. Valerie Sweeney. Valerie, good afternoon.
Hi, Joe.
Your first day out today.
Let out, as I would say, feeling a bit better because I've just had 6 weeks of the cocooning and I've been grieving as well.
Because your husband died.
My husband died 6 weeks ago.
And what was his name, Valerie?
He was Don.
Don.
A lovely, lovely man. Picture of health. Yeah. And it wasn't the COVID. It was a brain tumour that he got. And like that lady there, it was the one day that I didn't go to see him that he died. Because my son had been home from Australia and he was going to drive me and then he said he needed to go to London and I said I'd go on the bus and it was the beginning of the lockdown and he said, Mom, please do not go on the bus, he said, because you could be bringing anything into that hospital and you could also be taking anything out of it. So I said, okay. So that night I was here and on my own and the phone rang and it was the matron and she said, did somebody ring you today to say that Don had got a bit of a turn? And I said, no. And she said, well, he's just got another one and he's passed on.
Oh.
I think you would have heard me screaming up there. I just could not believe it, you know. But
the new, and you will not obviously never forget the words. How was it broken to you again, Valerie? That sequence of words.
Yeah, it was. Did somebody ring you today about Don? He had a turn in the afternoon.
Yeah.
And I said no. And she said, well, he has just had another turn and he's passed on. I would never forget it, Joe, as long as I live. But
and are you on your own now, Valerie, in the house?
I am. I have two boys.
Yeah.
One is in Australia and one is in London.
Ah, okay.
And the poor boy from Australia had to go back before the funeral because they were closing the Australian borders. Immediately. So he missed it and he was upset. He was very, very, very upset. But this morning anyway, as I said, I felt a little bit lighter because I knew that I could go out. So I walked as far as the crematorium. Mm-hmm. I picked out my little stone that I'm going to have engraved. And the chap there said, you can have a little ceremony with yourself, your friends, when we put the ashes in.
Okay.
Oh, I said, that sounds great. Yeah. And I walked back with a much lighter heart.
Okay. That's a a beautiful little vignette, even the way you describe it, and the as you say, your heart lifted a little bit in these awful, awful times.
Mm-hmm.
Valerie, stay with us. 51551, wash your hands, as you know. Terry McGough, Terry.
Oh, good afternoon, Joe. My deepest sympathy to those ladies and anybody that's lost loved ones through this virus.
You're over 70, as you tell us in your call. And
yeah, I'm 74, Joe.
Oh, good. So you went out today for your first
day of freedom.
Your walk of freedom. And what happened?
Well, I walked up. I'm from Ballyfermot, Joe, and I walked up Drumfin Avenue, went around and went up by the garage. I said I'd walk up as far as the Silver Granite. So when I got to the garage, I came down with a thud.
Oh, no.
There was a lip on the road, on the path. And the lady in the garage came out to me. She lifted me up, brought me in, made me a cup of tea. The staff, her name was Sandra. Mm-hmm. The other girl's name was Michelle. And Pippa was the man.
Okay, is that the Apple Green garage near
That's
Lidl?
That's the Apple Green garage, Joe. They offered to take me home. And I said, I know what, I'd be grand. They offered to bring me home straight away. No, I said, I'd be grand. So after I had the cup of tea, such kindness, Joe.
Well,
such kindness.
Do you regret going out for your walk?
Not at all, I do not.
Okay.
I regret that the path wasn't fixed. The reason I said I'd stay to the path, because I didn't have any light switches to tip for to go across the green lights, you know.
Yeah, yeah. And how where did you land when you fell? Don't say on the ground. Where did you land in terms of your hands or your knees?
My knee and my arm. But my knee now, I'll have a lovely little scab on that.
Okay.
But I'm fine otherwise. So I walked up and anyway to the Silver Granite. And on my way back, I said, I'm going to have a look. And well, on my way up, I said, I'm going to see how many places like this is on the way.
Mm-hmm.
So I did. There's three at Lidl. Shore that has no cover on it.
Broken footpaths or broken pavements, yeah.
Correct.
Yeah.
And there's two at the Apple Green garage. So, like I said, I took pictures then on the way back. But when I came in, I said, no, I got a cup of tea. I said, no, I'm going to ring Joe and let him know that people to be careful. Because
just be really careful, yeah.
These things are out there and you wouldn't notice them.
And the corporation are out because I saw them. He's the same chap. I don't know his name, but we always have a chat every morning around 7:30 down. And the Bull Wall, he's out there. He's great, great humoured man. He's out there emptying the bins. So the litter, I know the collection of bins, household bins, is a different contract now. But the litter people in Dublin City Council are still out. I just wonder, are the roads department working?
Well, I don't know. They'd want to take a good look at this. Now, this has made me more conscious now of the things that need
careful,
to be fixed.
I just should. But how are you feeling now? You're okay?
I'm feeling very good. And I must say thank you to my neighbours, particularly my next door neighbour who sent me in my dinner all the time.
Yeah, great.
And my neighbours around who are very kind to me, Joe.
Well done. Well done.
And now, Terry, we have a little dance group. I'll give that a little plug.
Yeah, great. Yeah.
It's the Swingin' 50s.
Okay.
We do a little dance thing down in the swimming pool. They have a studio down there. And we're all seniors, and we go in there every Tuesday. And I must pay tribute to Kathy Coughlin because she got us all on WhatsApp. She's our dance teacher.
You're all connected, yeah. Okay.
And then to Catherine Flood from Dublin City Council, who has a fitness class 2 days a week on Zoom.
Well done. So you're keeping occupied. And you're on Zoom, obviously, Terry.
Oh, I'm on Zoom. I just got on Zoom to for the fitness class.
That's super, super. Okay, so you'll go out again tomorrow?
Oh, I'll go out tomorrow. Like, I was out at 8 o'clock, I said, I won't bump into anybody.
Yeah, you bumped into the ground.
I hit the ground.
And it's just a warning to people who haven't been out in a while, just be extraordinarily careful.
Yes.
You know, try and, well, just be careful and go for a short walk to get going. But and again, it's the regulations are, you go for a walk, you're not to go to the shops or interact.
Oh no, I didn't
meet
go to
other
shops,
people.
The girl brought me into the garage.
I know, they're very
tea.
Good. They're very good. Okay, Terry, you mind yourself, Petal. Mind yourself.
I will indeed, Joe. Thank you very much.
Okay.
God bless now, bye-bye.
God bless you, Terry McGough. Ellen, good afternoon.
Oh, good afternoon. I just had to ring you, and because I'm in the over 70 group and I have been cocooning, strictly cocooning for over 5 weeks. Mm-hmm. So today was my first walk. I was 20 minutes out and 20 minutes back.
Okay.
Now, Joe, I am a good walker, but never in my life did I enjoy a walk like today's walk. The magnificent air, the magnificent sky, the magnificent sun, and oh, the beautiful bird song. And it triggered a memory for me of a story I once read about a slave who once said, when I discovered the beauty of nature, I was a slave no longer. I think nobody could have described it better. I just had to tell you that.
Give us that quote again, Ellen, so lovely.
I discovered the beauty of nature, I was a slave no longer.
Isn't that beautiful?
Isn't that beautiful?
What did you hear today? The sights, the sounds, the smells?
Oh, it was like being a bit in heaven. You can imagine being cocooned for 5 weeks and the things we take for granted. But today, I mean, nature just took over.
And are you on your own in the house?
I am, yes.
So
I am on my own. But as I said, I'm a very good walker. I love to walk. But today was just a different experience.
And what was it like being in the house for 5 weeks on your own?
Well, I'm a good reader. And the other thing, I did a lot of decluttering, which has given me some satisfaction. Mm. On the other hand, it also gave me some guilt when I saw the amount of waste. You know, you see things at the back of the drawers that you bought and forgot you even had them. I think there's a lesson in this.
Okay, and what part of the country are you in, Ellen?
I'm in Kildare.
Kildare, because I know I was contacted a few weeks ago, Councillor Anna Granger of Fianna Gael was really campaigning strongly in this one, and she's got her way. And a lot of people will be pleased. The four Dublin local authorities have decided that Councillor Granger was campaigning for a specific time for over 70s. So, and in other words, that the venues wouldn't be too crowded, that people would give priority to over 70s, to the parks. And that's between 1:30 and 3:30 every day now is the parks. They're asking people, it's from tomorrow, Wednesday the 6th, the 2-hour period will be reserved across all Dublin city and county parks for people who are cocooning. This includes the over 70s and medically vulnerable people. Other park users are asked to consider using parks at other times so that those cocooning can have as much space and confidence in physical distancing as possible. And also, I think if the local, that's a great result, but it's on during Liveline as well. Bring your earphones. Wash your hands, bring your earphones. But it also means that the people who run the parks know that between 1:30 and 3:30 every day, the people using the parks will be over 70 are part of the medically vulnerable group. So I presume they're going to be extra vigilant, knowing that the group are out at the same time. So that's a great idea.
Yeah.
And that's from tomorrow in Dublin City and County Parks. I'm sure other... Ellen, you said I just wanted to ask you this because I'm still very struck in my head our three earlier callers. Did you lose someone, not in this epidemic, but you say you're living on your own. Were you previously married?
No.
No, okay.
No, fortunately, I didn't lose anyone. But I today, too, I was struck. Now, I only met about 12 to 16 people at different... How everyone kept, even when, you know, when they turn a corner and see you coming, they moved out on the road. It was wonderful.
I'm just so conscious of Betty and James and talking about closure. You can't get closure and the difficulty of trying to come to terms, not just with the death, but in these circumstances.
Yeah.
Betty, have you someone else you can talk to? Have you family? And you there, Betty? Yeah?
Talk to them on the phone, Joe. They don't come into the house.
Do they not?
Well, I will tell you something. I have three great-grandchildren. And little Jackie was six there a couple of weeks ago. And before I went into hospital, I made out all the birthday cards. I have a lot of birthdays in March and April. Gave them to my daughter-in-law to distribute to them, you know.
Yeah,
so,
okay.
Mum rang me on the Sunday, his birthday, and she said, Jack wants to come over. They don't live too far away. We're not going to come in. We'll just go into the front garden and open your window. He wants to say thank you for his card. And he has a little brother, Connor. He's two. He's gorgeous. But anyway, they came over, little Connor. And little Connor came over to the window to me, and he put his two little arms up to me to pull them in from the window. Yeah. Oh, I said, Connor, I'd love to give you a little hug. Do you know what he did then, Joe? He went to my hall door and started kicking it. And he was saying, nin, nin. And his mum said to him, stop kicking Nana's hall door. He wanted in. Poor little lamb. I just thought that brightened up my day that day.
I'm just conscious of the wide, the bigger picture as well, like the UK.
You try to hold on to these lovely little things.
They're gorgeous, but then the overarching reality that
I know.
It's just been announced that the UK have surpassed Italy with Europe's highest official debt
toll. Oh, my goodness.
My God, yeah.
I think they were a bit slow, Jojo. I must hand it to our government. I think they're handling it very well.
Yeah.
Under the circumstances. I just wish people would listen, those that go out and think, don't think it's ever going to happen to them, or they could be bringing it to their family, you know.
Yeah.
And I'm not a do-gooder by any means, but it's too serious.
Yeah.
Like, it's taking lives, you know.
Valerie, have you got somebody that you can talk to and turn to at this time?
I have a lot of friends and neighbours around, and I'd be putting on weight because there's a lot of people giving me in apple pies and all sorts of things.
Don't worry about that now.
I have a sister in Waterford, and she rings me every single day.
Great.
And Brendan, my son in Australia, he rings three times a day.
Wow.
And my son in London keeps in touch as well. So, but I don't have any relatives around here where I live. And I found the 6 weeks horrendous.
Yeah.
Oh, horrendous, because nobody could come in to actually sympathise with you. Nobody could come in for a cup of tea. A lady across the road rang me, and she said to me, I can actually see you in your sitting room, but she said, I can't come and hug you, she said.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's terrible.
Valerie, pick up that phone. It might be your son. Don't let that call go. Don't mind me. Pick up that phone for a sec and say hello to them, and I'll come back after this break. 51551, wash your hands.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
And as we heard there, Valerie, you have people ringing you, which is great.
Yeah, which is brilliant. Yeah.
Keeping in touch, okay.
They are indeed. And I think, actually, Joe, you never really know how good your friends are until something like this happens. And then you realise what good friends you have. You know, it's lovely to know that there are people out there thinking about you and wondering how you're getting on and things like that. So, as I say, I don't know if I'll ever get over this sudden death, but I often think we had a great marriage, Joe, and we laughed a lot. And we also, you'd mention holidays and we were gone. You know,
yeah,
but I often think it was maybe the way we met, the strange way we met. I've often thought of that because we were actually left behind at a barbecue, and we tried to get a man in a farmhouse to lend us his phone to ring a taxi.
Okay.
And he actually pulled up the windows, and the next thing, a double-barreled shotgun came out, and he said, clear off out of here or I'll fill your arses full of lead.
Oh, my God, Valerie. So yourself and Don hightailed it hand in hand, I hope.
We hightailed it, and we were getting drenched at that stage. You know, I didn't know his name. He didn't know my name. And I kept thinking, if my mother could see me now, you know, those days. But anyway, we saw a fire in the field, and it was FCA on manoeuvres. So Don persuaded them to bring us back into Limerick.
That's,
so he
that's
said
how
to
you
me
met.
That night, he said, this warrants another date.
Valerie, I'm looking, and I've just been given it here, the quote, you sparked it in my head from W.B. Yeats when you mentioned your friends, and his great quote was, think where man's glory most begins and ends, and say my glory was, I had such friends.
This
well, your Don obviously had a great friend in you, and you've great friends as well.
We had.
Okay, Valerie, condolences again, and mind yourself, and please, I know you're on your own, and the boys are away, but if you need anything, please give us a ring. Please give us a ring.
I will, Joe.
Okay,
and thank you very much for that thought.
Again.
Okay, bye.
Again. Bye-bye. Ursula, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe. Thank you.
Thank you for making the call as well, Ursula. But just, you want to put forward a scenario, which I don't think many people have thought about, though we have been doing for a number of weeks now, people who are at home with adult children with special needs, and given that the daycare centres and the carers have stopped coming in. But what's your worry, Ursula?
Well, probably my biggest worry, and certainly having listened to Betty James and Valerie's very sad stories, doesn't make me feel any better about the worry that I presently have. And my son is suffering at the minute from anxiety, and he's very, very frightened at the moment of hospital or anything to do with sickness. Given probably he had a recent operation and maybe didn't, you know, he wouldn't be able to preempt pain or whatever. And I think the shock of that, coupled with the fact that medications had, you know, reacted differently, you know, for him, that makes it very worrying that in the event of him getting COVID-19, you know, what would be in place for not just for him, but this is all people with special needs. You know, if there's any plan drawn up that how, because they certainly can't be brought in and, you know, just treated like everybody who...
Their distress would be greater. Because of their intellectual disability.
Yeah, you know, they
are so dependent. Your children, your adult children are so dependent on you, or on your husband as well, I hope.
On everything. You know, he'd be, you know, a great little person, great little fun person. But then when it comes down to anything different, he's totally lost. So he would need, you know, guidance through every situation and more so through the hospital. Now, he's very aware of the virus and very afraid of the virus.
Good, and very vigilant as well. I hope you all are.
And he'll ask, you know, could he die from it? You know, what's the chance of me dying? Or when he'd look at Daddy's 70 and he'd call him the old man. Well, what about the old man if he gives a sneeze or a cough? But, you know, he would be saying these things, but deep down then there comes the time when he can no longer stay strong and have a little, you know, breakdown about how he's worried. Now, I was wondering about in hospital situations, like it's very difficult because there's kind of a one format, you know, for people when they're sick, whatever. And as much over the years that you would, you know, bring things, you know, to attention of people that there might be a better way of getting around somebody who would have an intellectual disability or certainly can't cope with the worry of hospital, then you meet different people all the time. So it's difficult, you know, they'd actually need a separate staff maybe that are trained up who would be available, you know, all the time at the hospital in the event of a person who was over-anxious or with that learning disability who would need that help.
And has he been in the house? What's it, do you want to give me his name?
Sean. Sean has Down syndrome.
Okay. And has Sean been in hospital before?
He has been in hospital before. And there was always, the thing when he was in hospital and he was younger, and I held him. He's had quite a few operations to him. But I would have always went to theatre, you know, held him in my arms till they actually had Sean asleep and then hand Sean over. And everybody went along with that. But then Sean grew you know, quite strong, very strong. And then the fear coupled with medication working a bit differently gave him an added strength. He's a strong boy, but not okay. an added strength with that. So I wouldn't, you know, I find it difficult to hold him. And there was an incident when he went in for an anaesthetic recently in January, just January, where he actually got himself off the theatre table, you know, even though I was holding him.
God, so I understand totally what you're saying.
Yeah, so I'm just wondering, like, you know, he's terrified of masks, terrified of all things that are different like that, you know. We were trying to explain to him, and, you know, we put masks in the house and, you know, I was putting it on and showing him and whatever and telling him if he did need to have any tests done, you know, just because you have to, you know, prepare him for everything because it won't come that easy to him. And he, you know, and I said, explained about the PPE gear that they'd be wearing if they were doing the test. And he said, oh, you mean those Chinese people like I see, they not come near me. And you're thinking, oh, so in his head now he's already worried and had seen enough himself to know, no, no, not happening to me. So I was...
Well, you want to raise that issue. Is there, has there been any talk gone into it? We presume there is, but what is... What happens if the parent is not allowed to go in, which you're presuming
Well, actually, I would have probably, you know, been thinking maybe they could go in, but now it's a very sad story that your program for James, Betty and Fowler, my deepest sympathy to them. And they're very harrowing stories. But I would be wondering, you know, for somebody with special needs, you know, if the parent is prepared, in my case, which I would be, and just have to take that chance if I did take it, I think, well, that would be that. I certainly would be better off than living knowing that I let Sean go in and not able to go in or wear that gear and scare the life out of him. You know, that would that choice not be given to an actual care or parent?
Well, it's an interesting point and situation to raise. But in the meantime, and I think you have to be extraordinarily vigilant, and Sean has as well, and your husband.
Just be
extraordinarily vigilant at this time. Ursula, thanks indeed. That's Ursula talking about her son, Sean. 51551, my friend.
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
You won't be hearing this phrase for a long time, but I'm going to say, let's go to Marbella. Mark Quinlan. Mark, good afternoon. Owner of the Harbour Bar in Marbella with his wife Penny. Mark is originally from Dublin. Mark, how are you?
Not too bad, Joe. Yourself?
Good, good. What's happening in Marbella? What's happening in Spain?
Spain is up the road today, to be honest with you, and it's kind of getting back to normal on the hairdressers and the shops, small shops opening, small hardware shops opening. Next Monday, it's kind of day two they're going into. The bars can open, restaurants can open 30% of their terrace from next Monday. A lot of people are choosing not to open, but in the restaurant, the bar trade, they're going to hold back from it, you know, because there's a big problem going on here, Joe, with the payments. There hasn't been one payment made to any member of staff since the 14th of March from the government.
Wow.
And it's not. There's a bit of chaos going on over here, over it, you know.
And was there an emergency payment scheme brought in, as there was?
There was an emergency payment. It's called ERTE. It was printed for. So the staff had to get 80% of their salaries they were given from the government. Everybody had to be made unemployed. The same situation as Ireland and England was made. And not a penny has gone to them staff since the 12th of March. Has gone to anybody. Since up to today, we are talking to all our own staff as well. That's why we set up the food bank and everything to feed the people. And our own staff is ringing us looking for food parcels. Disgrace, you know.
Wow. And why won't you reopen next weekend with 30% of your terrace?
Because to put 2 metres in between 30%, we sit 200 people.
Okay.
On our terrace, we sit 55 people.
Okay.
Put 2 metres in between the terrace and open 50% of the terrace, we can sit 20 people. I have 22 staff.
Okay.
And I have to bring all the staff back to justify it. I can't bring 2 or 3 staff back, otherwise I have to make them redundant. So there's a few catches and phrases inside the system, you know.
So when do you think you will get back open, Mark?
We're going to go to the 25th anyway for May. We're going to bang it out.
Yeah. Well, I know of Ireland, if restaurants and pubs heard that in Ireland, they'd be over the moon. 25th of May, what will be the restrictions when you open then?
50%. Now, it's changing every day, to be honest with you. Now, okay. The playwright I've had for the last 8 years in Alberia, we're not going to open that till September. I'm not opening it at all.
All right.
Even though we can open it, I'm going to make a renovation on it, a new renovation. But it's we're going to go over the harbour. The harbour's right in the seafront, the restaurant, so it's over the port, so the location has everything there for it. So we can manage with it. You know, we only have to break even for the first month. I think mid-July we should start getting back to normal with business here.
And what about the beaches? Are they reopening?
No, you're not allowed on the beach at the present moment. You're not allowed. Okay. There's certain times you're allowed for old people can go out over 70 years of age. And it's been policed very, very good, being honest with you. Over 70, well, from 8 o'clock in the morning till 11 in the morning. And then you can go out from 8 o'clock in the evening until 10 o'clock in the evening. In between that, there'll be families with kids can go out.
Okay.
But there's only each time one adult and one child allowed to go out each time. Not two children and one adult. The beaches are not open for swimming. They're open for walking.
Okay.
Between them times.
Right. And but like over 25,000 people have died in Spain, as you know.
Yeah, it was 25,500 to today's numbers. But the numbers have dropped more dramatically. But like we're on a system now with the government.
We're
getting different letters every single day. Okay, now you can open tomorrow. You can open the next day. You can do this. You can change your meterage.
Yeah.
Before it was 4 people to a table, now you can have 10 people to a table. So it's hard even to promote your business.
And is that changing as the numbers drop? The number of cases and the number of deaths.
It's dropped to 250 now per day. It's averaging 250. That's what it's averaging at. And since last week, last Sunday, everybody was out on the road. They allowed everybody out for 1 hour. So I think it's just going to, everybody's going to say, I think Ireland's going to see the same as well. I was talking to a friend of mine, businesses there, and he said, we're August. I can't see it being August. They're just going to have to see which way it drops.
I don't know whether people saw the Prime Minister of New Zealand was completely baffled about the Irish roadmap going to July and August. Mark, in terms of your business recovering and what are all the bars and restaurants thinking out there?
There's an action plan put into place here by the government to give you interest-free loans. But you still have to pay them back regardless of which way it is. They offered interest-free loans to businesses. But like we're a big operation down here, Joe. We're down here in 17, 18 years on the coast. The small restaurants and bars down here that live on day-to-day that will not survive this. There's bars and restaurants, friends of mine, and they're just not going to bother opening. They're for sale on the door.
Wow.
They can't carry it, you know. They can't carry the staff. You still have to pay your rent. You still have to pay your social security. You still have to pay your taxes. Rents are still coming out of the bank. So it's like there's a big cost to this. It probably costs us a couple of €100,000, the cost of it. But we can carry it on the cost, you know. But it's a lot of places can't carry that.
But the likes of Marbella, you need... One, you need volume and numbers, but also people aren't going to go to resorts where only one third of the cafes are open.
You have a lot of expats live here. There's a lot of expats. So 50% of your business will be expats anyway.
Okay,
now, a lot of them would have returned back in the crisis before this happened. They would have returned back and to go back home. So we don't know the numbers that's actually here, but we can survive on the local people besides the tourism. The tourism is a bonus for us, you know.
Okay, well done.
Because it's a yacht club as well, we have a lot of members and that, and we can't survive. But people can't survive. They just can't. And they can't take the staff back on, they pay redundancy. So all your staff are years. So if we were to pay a redundancy, it costs us hundreds and hundreds of thousands. Just have to figure out. We have to start again, we start again. That's the way I look at it.
Okay, well done, Mark. How long are you out there, Mark?
This will be my 17th year now.
Wow.
Here.
And did you specifically go out to set up a restaurant chain and bars?
I had a mill house in Cluny for a few years before I came out. So
then
I opened Beckett's restaurant. I had that for 7 years.
That was well known, wasn't it? That was a great reputation.
Last year. But it's also with the food banks here. We're feeding 600 people here a week now, the food banks.
Wow.
And we have to stop on Friday because everybody that's volunteers are going back to their own jobs.
Okay.
And I don't know what them people are going to do because there's just nothing coming in.
And Mark, what about all the products you had in your restaurant?
Well, what we did was we got together. I work with a co-op association down here of restaurants that that's we buy in pair, you know.
Okay, great.
Well, what I did was I contacted them all. We all had a lot of stuff put in the freezer and the fridges, so we set up, I think, my age concern and feeding the frontline nurses' children and the doctors' children that couldn't get home. They were working 16, 17 hours a day. So I took on 2 days, the Wednesday and the Sunday. Another mate of mine took on maybe a Monday. Another restaurant took on El Banco. They took on a Wednesday. And we just delivered and cooked at home these days and delivered them, because all the people that was in the nursing homes here that looked after the elderly people, a lot of them died, is because, and they left the elderly people with no care.
Oh, God.
So nobody was looking after them, feeding them. So we had to get together. So we put all our freezers together, and our fridges, what we have. And there was never enough anyway. We still have to keep buying every week, you know.
Well done. Well done.
Everything up. But they're back. They're back now, and anyway, these nurses. So they're, everything's kind of back to normal now from this Monday. So that was last Wednesday, was the last day. Now we are feeding the age concern.
And that timeline, Mark, is that earlier than people had predicted even 2 weeks ago? Do you follow
me? Yeah, well, we were told 16th of July. That's what we were originally told. Planned for the 16th of July.
And now it's the 25th of May.
Yeah, then it went back to the 10th of June. Okay. And then it went back to the 25th of May. Now it's gone back till the 11th. We can open the 11th if we want to.
Yeah, but we're not next Monday. Yeah, I know, with restrictions. Wow.
I was stopping all the time. I was speaking to my mother there earlier on. I said to her, I said, listen, Mom, it's changing all the time, so don't be worrying too much about it, you know?
Hmm. The problem is, I know you say a lot of your business is people living there, but will there be any flights to Marbella or to Malaga, the nearest airport?
No, that's air worry. It's air worry as well. We hold the staff trying to keep it in the summer business. We depend on the paddy, the Irish people, a lot. 60% of our business is Irish. We depend on the Dutch, the English, and if they're not coming, then we just... So, do you know what it is? I started at the start. I'm going to start again. That's what I have to look at. I'm not going to stress myself over this. And I tried to mentor a few other friends of mine as well. I said, look, we're all in the same boat. It's nobody's fault. You know?
I see texts coming in there saying the Harbour Bar is one of the nice... It's a magnificent view, apparently. Yeah. And it's one of the nicest restaurants and bars in Marbella. So well done, Mark. I hope to God you get back up on your feet now. Great attitude, and well done in helping out those nursing homes with your own. Keep the faith. I hope people now. In one sense, if we hold our nerve now, the dates on that roadmap might come forward. Simon Coveney, the Taoiseach, was talking to Sean this morning, and he intimated that. It's a living plan, isn't that what they say? So it can change. Yeah. Hopefully for the positive. Mark, look after yourself and your family and Penny. And all. Okay, likewise. That's Mark Quinlan, owner of the Harbour Bar in Marbella. I need to take a quick break. 51551. Wash your hands, and remember, tomorrow if you're out walking between 1:30 and 3:30 and you're over 70 in the Dublin parks, which are reserved now between 1:30 and 3:30 for the over 70s from tomorrow, don't just wash your hands. Bring your earphones.